a week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Joining us now from Moscow for a look at the World Cup quarterfinals is Washington Post soccer writer Stephen Goff. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Great to join you.
Steve, let's take a look at the quarterfinals. The first quarterfinal on Friday, France versus Uruguay. Two names that come to mind, Steve, Mbappe and Cavani, teammates for Paris Saint-Germain, both coming off big games. What about Cavani? I know he kind of limped off the field in their last match.
Yeah, there's some questions whether Cavani will play or not. If he does not, that's a big loss for Uruguay, who goes into this game probably a slight underdog because of France's power all over the field. If he plays, I think Uruguay's got a good chance to win this match. So a lot of questions surrounding him.
Mbappe getting a lot of headlines, Steve. What are your impressions of him so far?
Dynamic, exciting player, incredible speed and acceleration. He can finish opportunities as well. Just a joy to watch. 19 years old, scored twice against Argentina, and just a fantastic talent. And I think he's still got a lot left in this World Cup, and Uruguay's going to have a lot of difficulty trying to contain him. Uruguay's been one of the top defensive teams in this tournament, so certainly a challenge for him to create more problems for an opponent. A lot of pressure on Uruguay to continue their defensive form.
Do you see that partnership between Suarez and Cavani as being crucial to Uruguay's success on Friday?
Sure. I mean, they'll lean heavily on their defense, of course, as the foundation of their formation. But you're going to have to score goals, and you're going to have to put France under pressure. France has allowed some goals in this tournament, and if Cavani and Suarez were on the field at the same time, they pose a major threat. You can't defend for an entire match, and Suarez won't be able to do it by himself. So if the two of them are together, good things should develop for Uruguay.
I'm talking with Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, the second quarterfinal on Friday in Kazan, Russia, Brazil, five-time World Cup champion, going up against Belgium. The Belgians, look back a bit at that great comeback they made against the Japanese, Steve.
Yeah, incredible. Japan was fun and assertive and attacking and just a joy to watch, and taking a 2-0 lead. Belgium had chances, though. They didn't convert. I mean, it looked like everything was flowing Japan's way, and Japan was going to play one way. They did not adjust, and Belgium took advantage of it, scored three times, including just a sensational match winner on essentially the last play of the game. Just a tremendous match, one of the best of this tournament, if not the best. Now Belgium will try to carry those good vibes into, I believe, is the best quarterfinal matchup, Belgium and Brazil. You know, Brazil is the favorite in this tournament at this point, but Belgium very capable of winning the match.
The Brazilians coming off a 2-0 victory over Mexico. Neymar with a goal in that match, Steve. What do you make of their chances?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brazil's the favorite. You know, we talk a lot about Brazil's attack and their style and the beautiful game, but defensively, they've been so good in this tournament. They've adapted. They've allowed very few chances. I think there have been maybe 5 shots on goal against them in the entire tournament. If they're not allowing anything, that's creating a lot of opportunity for their attack, and over time, they're going to beat you. Neymar's had a good tournament, and we're really not quite sure if he's at 100%. He had the injury layoff for a long time, and he had another ailment or issue around the start of the tournament, so he might be getting better. If he stays on his feet, he's been embellishing a lot of tackles and fouls, and it's really, I think, turned people against him in some ways.
The first quarterfinal on Saturday, Sweden versus England. Sweden defeated Switzerland on Tuesday 1-0, and England gets by Colombia on penalty kicks. Another great, exciting match. Why don't you start with the English, Steve, and their performance?
When it went to penalty kicks the other day, you figured, well, England's going to lose again, because that's what they do in penalty kick shootouts. They lose. This time was a little different. They overcame the emotional blow of allowing the equalizer. in second half stoppage time. And, you know, you just always had a feeling in this game, especially since Colombia was missing their best player, James Rodriguez, that England would somehow prevail. In the penalty kicks, Pickford was terrific in goal, made a save. This is a emotionally uplifting victory for England because of their past in these situations. They played 120 minutes. That will have an effect on them going into Saturday's game, fatigue and injuries. So I like their chances. I think they are a slight favorite. Harry Kane has been the leading scorer in this tournament. So very good chance for England to make its deepest run in the World Cup since 1990.
And in the last quarterfinal at this World Cup, Russia, the host country, will take on Croatia in Sochi. The Russians, Steve, are they the surprise team at this World Cup?
Yeah, I think you should never underestimate the advantage of playing a World Cup at home. I don't think Russia is a very good team. They won their first two games easily against weak opponents. They were clobbered by Uruguay. And then they found a way to beat Spain with a defensive tactic that no one enjoyed watching, but it was effective. And then they prevailed on penalty kicks. I think we're going to see the same tactic from Russia. They're going to sit back. They're going to let Croatia play with the ball, and Russia will look to counterattack. It's what they do. The crowd will be behind them. Nationalism during this tournament has risen as the team has advanced. And there's something to be said for the home field advantage in a World Cup. I think Croatia's the better team, but it's a different situation when the home team's involved.
Thanks, Steve. That's Steve Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. And Steve was talking with me from Moscow, the Russian capital. And we'll hear more of Steve's insights during Thursday's Sunny Side of Sports. Steve mentioned Tottenham and England star Harry Kane as the leading goal scorer at the 2018 World Cup. Kane converted a 57th-minute penalty shot against Colombia Tuesday and now has 6 goals. Romelu Lukaku of Belgium and Cristiano Ronaldo of Portugal are next with 4 goals each. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As the World Cup football tournament continues its drama-filled march to the final on July 15th, one thing is sure, sports merchandisers are already big winners. Untold millions of fans and fashionistas have been snapping up national team jerseys to show their support. Let's listen in now to this stylish and fashionable World Cup feature from VOA's Adam Phillips.
That's the official anthem of the FIFA 2018 World Cup, currently in the midst of its knockout rounds in Russia, as the world's finest national soccer teams compete for the beautiful sport's highest prize. Each team bears its own unique shirts, called jerseys. They're especially designed in colors and patterns that can be instantly recognized and impressive to opponents and onlookers alike.
So it's a pretty magical world.
That's soccer fan, bon vivant, and fashion commentator Simon Doonan. In his new book, Soccer Style, The Magic and Madness, he says that at one time, the worlds of fashion and soccer would have made very strange bedfellows. But times have definitely changed.
So in the old days, you would see the hardcore Arsenal fan, Chelsea fan. They would be wearing their shirt. It wasn't objectively particularly attractive. It was all about what the meaning was. Now guys wear their shirt, but they want it to look cool. They want to integrate it and go out to some bar or a night spot and feel like, you know, Mr. Fabulous. It's definitely a global language. I mean, you see pictures of people in Africa, England, Latin America. Like in China, you know, Chinese people follow multiple teams and multiple players. They don't have that sort of single allegiance that you often get in England, for example.
You can find all those jerseys and more at Upper 90, a New York City soccer store, founded and co-owned by Douglas Katanas.
The diversity of the city matches the diversity of the type of jerseys and apparel that we carry. Soccer fans are also very fickle about what they wear, and they're going to wear something that appeals to them but is also in keeping with what everybody else finds popular too.
As in New York, so in Dakar, says Abdulrahman Dia, a staff reporter with VOA's French to Africa service. When Senegal was doing well in the early stages of this year's World Cup, it seemed to him that everyone was wearing the red, green, and gold of the national team. However, because Senegal was knocked out of the competition by Colombia,
what you will see in exchange is a lot of jerseys of the European teams. There is a lot of Real Madrid because they have a lot of fans here. Barcelona, Liverpool mainly because of Sadio Mane, who is from Senegal. The French national team, you will see very few of them here. A lot of people don't want to be seen supporting the French because they are the former colonizers. People identify more with the African team. Sometimes you will see a Nigeria jersey.
Nigerian jerseys with their black and white wing motif on the sleeves and a main body of neon lime green have been this year's runaway hit. Again, Simon Doonan.
The Nigerian shirts are sold out around the world. Within hours, it became the cool thing that people had to have to wear with their street-style outfits. It was very flamboyant, really fun, daring, a lot of pattern, a lot of color, and it tweaked something in the global consciousness. There's a global interest in all things African. If England had done a shirt like that, it would have looked not right. The bravado and boldness of it, that's Africa.
Doonan says there's another dazzling, very un-English shirt on vivid display in the 2018 FIFA World Cup.
It's Colombia. It has these daring kind of glam rock, David Bowie, lightning bolts that are emerging from the armpits. And it's great. Nothing intimidates an opponent quite like saying, you know, I have magical powers in my armpits. This shirt is successful on so many levels from a design point of view, and the recognition factor is off the charts.
Hail Colombia.
Hail Colombia.
Now, Brazil is a huge team. They're really going for style down there, don't they?
Well, not only do the Brazilians go for style, but they also keep winning the World Cup. Brazil won the World Cup 5 times, hence the 5 stars that you see here above the crest. And their shirt is a real classic. It doesn't tend to vary hugely from year to year because they've got so much heritage to play with. Pelé and Neymar and Alves, they didn't win last time, so the pressure is on.
Every team has both a home jersey and an away jersey. The home jersey creates the team's primary look. The away jersey is what team members wear when they play in a rival stadium, or in the World Cup, when the pattern and color of their home jersey might get confused with their opponents. Belgium's away jersey features an argyle pattern this year, while Croatia's away jersey sports an elegantly muted checkerboard pattern. And now, that's Robbie Baum, manager of the Manhattan Upper 90 store, pressing Lionel Messi's name and number on an Argentina away jersey. Much as he loves it, it's not his favorite.
The whole France collection I really, really love. The away shirt is probably my favorite, that white with the blue and red sort of heathering in it. Their training top is really nice, this classic like French marinara, white with blue stripes, really, really clean, really beautiful shirt.
For Asla Pellet, a veteran soccer reporter for VOA, who has covered the previous 2 World Cup competitions, what's underneath the jerseys can help make all the difference.
Because the bodies that are carrying the jerseys are definitely hot. I had the chance to see them taking the jerseys off, putting them on many times. It's part of my job. Don't be jealous. I mean, these guys are very young, athletic, and muscular, and they train hours a day. So, of course, they look amazing.
Pellet has collected about 50 different jerseys, many from world-famous players.
We can name Neymar, Fabiano, Luis Fabiano. I have Da Silva, Loco Abreu. So many very famous players who are right now playing in World Cup. A lot of people want those back or want me to give them as a gift, but I'm never going to do that. I have a great collection.
Are these dirty jerseys you've been given?
There was one dirty one, famous Argentine player, De Alessandro. He was playing for Internacional of Rio Grande do Sul. He played his 150th game, scored a goal. And his number 10 jersey, sweaty, he takes it off and gives it to me. And the whole stadium cried because they were all dying to have that jersey probably. By the way, soccer players don't smell bad. They are always showering.
But Pellet admits that diehard fans in used jerseys can sometimes smell ripe.
You know, you sit next to someone, smells horrible, and they're like, sorry, I've been wearing this shirt for the last 30 years. It brings my team good luck. So, you know, you keep it as a good luck charm, and you never wash it, and you keep wearing it.
Because any World Cup jersey instantly communicates a national identity or a wearer's allegiance, it can often make a potent political statement too, thus courting bad luck and danger.
In Latin America, you wear your jersey, you show your colors. There's, you know, a little bit of fear attached if it's a very difficult game. And, like, you know, if you're walking around the stadium of your rival, you don't want to wear the jersey because you don't want to get beaten up.
Pellet has noticed that in today's political climate in America, wearing one's national jersey or not wearing it can make a statement in her own diverse Brooklyn neighborhood where many immigrants live.
Yet, we don't see a lot of Mexican people walking around with their Mexican jerseys because most of them are probably not legal here, so they're scared of being identified, not be able to stay in the country.
Pediatrician Alok Patel offers two inspiring examples of ways that jerseys can connect the deeply personal with the big wide world and even with life itself.
So my favorite jersey that I own is a long sleeve keeper's jersey from FC Barcelona. It's neon green, so it's nice and loud. They had a sponsorship with UNICEF. So I wear the jersey because it's cool, but also it has UNICEF in big bold letters right across the front, which for me represents my love for pediatric health and global health and how soccer can be used to influence brands. I'm getting like chills right now when I'm saying this. It takes me back to that really famous story in the 2004 Indian tsunami where they found the boy stranded after the disaster. He had nothing with him. He was floating on a sofa in the Indian Ocean, had been without food for days, and was wearing a Cristiano Ronaldo jersey. That represented hope for him. That represented his passion. And it's just phenomenal that that one jersey encapsulates so much for these kids.
Of course, soccer is a game, often a rough one. But for Simon Doonan, the author of Soccer in Style, that tension is all a part of the mystery.
Well, that's the wonderful paradox of soccer, football. You get these people together and they want to kill each other and win. But paradoxically, it's unifying huge numbers of people to all come together and watch the World Cup. These things are going on at the same time. It's a sweet thing because that's just life.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Adam Phillips reporting from New York.
Thanks, Adam. That was certainly a sweet, stylish, and fashionable World Cup feature. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Joining us now with an update on the Wimbledon tennis tournament is my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Tuesday, world number one Rafael Nadal made a comfortable return to the grass surface and booked a spot in the second round. He defeated Israel's Dudi Sela in straight sets, 6-3, 6-3, 6-2. After the match, Rafa said it felt good to be back on center court.
I am lucky. It was not the first time. And it's always a special. It's a great tournament. Special way to go on the center court. The club is just fantastic, and I enjoyed the fact that I had the chance to play in the center court. It's great. What I see, people and the beautiful club.
Rafa was also asked his opinion about the enforced shot clock, a rule change that gives players only 25 seconds between serves. The U.S. Open is set to introduce the shot clock next month, and Wimbledon is expected to follow suit next year. Rafa was repeatedly docked a first serve at the 2017 French Open for violating the time limit between points, so it's no surprise that he is not in support of the rule. He said plans to speed up tennis could water down the drama. And he said, quote, "I don't feel the matches that stay for the history of our sport went that quickly." Rafa pointed to his 2008 Wimbledon final where he went head-to-head against Roger Federer for an epic 4 hours, 48 minutes. That match is widely considered to be the best final match ever played at the All England Club. At this tournament, Rafa hopes to win the French Open and Wimbledon in the same year for a third time. That would tie him with current record holder Bjorn Borg of Sweden. Rafa's next match will be played on Thursday against Mikhail Kukushkin of Kazakhstan. Also on the men's side, Serbia's Novak Djokovic defeated American Tennis Sandgren 6-3, 6-1, 6-2 to advance to the second round. After the match, Djokovic also weighed in on the shot clock debate and said he understands the move but is displeased that the players were not advised beforehand. He's quoted as saying, "We are not participating in the conversation or decision-making. That's something that is frustrating, to be honest, from a player perspective." Djoko next plays on Thursday against Argentina's Horacio Zaballos. And Austria's Dominic Thiem has abruptly ended his Wimbledon bid in the first round. The French Open runner-up retired with an apparent back injury during his match with Marcos Bagatis of Cyprus. Thiem received a deep tissue back massage before the start of the third set, but to no avail. He called it quits with Marcos leading 6-4, 7-5, 2-0. On the women's side, Russia's Maria Sharapova lost the first Wimbledon opening match of her career to fellow Russian Vitalia Diachenko, 6-7, 7-6, 6-4. Sharapova entered the tournament with 13 opening round wins and 0 losses at Wimbledon. She hasn't lost the first round of a major since 2010. After the match, Sharapova told reporters, "Sometimes you put yourself in a better or winning position and you don't finish through. That was the case today." However, reigning Wimbledon champion Garbiñe Muguruza of Spain has advanced to the second round, defeating Great Britain's Naomi Brody 6-2, 7-5. Last year, Garbiñe defeated Venus Williams to claim the Wimbledon title. After Tuesday's match, Garbiñe said since then, she's learned how to cope with the pressures of winning.
"I think as a tennis player, when you win Wimbledon, you know, I think it's winning the best tournament. Your mind is like, I won Wimbledon, you know, it's like priceless. And of course, it's a Grand Slam. And the repercussion, of course, that has winning Wimbledon, it has a big impact."
Garbiñe will face Belgium's Alison van Utwijk on Thursday. On Wednesday, Venus Williams defeated Alexandra Dugarou 4-6, 6-0, 6-1. And Serena Williams is set to face Victoria Tomova of Bulgaria. And that's all from me. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Japan's World Cup football team, which exited the tournament Monday after a heartbreaking 3-2 loss to Belgium in Rostov-on-Don, Russia. The Japanese fans and players left a lasting impression of sportsmanship and courtesy in Russia, an impression that won't be easily forgotten. A photo that went viral on social media showed that the Japanese team left behind an exceptionally clean locker room in Rostov-on-Don. The Japanese also left a note that said "thank you" in Russian and was signed simply "Japan." And it led to a wave of positive headlines and reports. And fans of the Japanese team just as they had after Japan beat Colombia 2-1 in its opening World Cup match, pushed disappointment aside and cleaned up the stadium before they left. Pure class by Japanese fans and the Japanese team. And that wraps up the 4th of July holiday edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Happy 242nd birthday to the USA. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sule Tarawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Today, the United States of America celebrates its birthday. It is a commemoration of the day in 1776 when representatives of the 13 British colonies signed the Declaration of Independence, a separation from Great Britain. There were many complex reasons for this split. The Declaration's principal author, Thomas Jefferson, called them a long train of abuses and usurpations. But it all boiled down to a few salient points. Much of it had to do with what the colonists perceived as abuses by the British government that went back many years. So, for example, the colonists greatly resented British laws that forbade any movement or settlement west of the Allegheny Mountains, and the imposition of taxes that were meant to replenish the British treasury depleted by years of fighting. And most of all, they were angry that they had no say in the hundreds of laws that were passed by the government in distant London. Indeed, in the run-up to the Revolutionary War, the oft-repeated phrase, "taxation without representation is tyranny," well summarized the colonists' grievances. In writing the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson proposed that by the authority of the people, an independent United States would become a nation on an equal footing with European nations that governed themselves, formed alliances with foreign nations, and engaged freely in commerce. And then Jefferson went a step further and declared that all men are created equal, and as such, enjoyed a number of unalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thomas Jefferson stated that it is the job of a government to ensure these rights, and therefore it is important that the government derives its powers from the consent of the governed. This passage is a response to the colonists' anger over taxation without representation, and a direct challenge to the British government. Today we celebrate the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the principles it defines. The day marks the beginning of the Revolutionary War, a 7-year conflict that ended with the birth of the United States of America and the promise of a new era of freedom. In the words of Thomas Jefferson, the equal rights of man and the happiness of every individual are now acknowledged to be the only legitimate objects of government.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the 31st African Union Summit underway in Mauritania. The 2018 theme is Winning the Fight Against Corruption, a Sustainable Path to Africa's Transformation.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. and our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.